It's our favorite time of day. It's Counter Stories, a podcast by people of color, for people of color, and everyone else. I'm Reverend Anthony Galloway, pastor of St. Mark AME Church and senior partner at the Dendros Group.
I'm Luz Maria Frias, Deputy Attorney General with the state of Minnesota. Any comments and insights that I share are strictly my own and should not be attributed to my employer.
And I'm Halili, owner of the Other Media Group and Counter Stories producer.
Don Eubanks couldn't be with us today. He is taking his daughter to get her booster shot. So we wish him all the luck and the protection and safety for making sure that his family is all set to be able to be around each other this holiday season. Now, at the time of our recording today, many of us across the nation are, and in many parts of the world, are getting ready for a series of holiday traditions. Now, this comes from many religions, many experiences, many cultural practices, all lining up and converging at this time. And so we thought it'd be a good idea to come together and say, what are some of the traditions that may be unique to us? Just because I don't necessarily know if I know what everybody does in our group during the holidays. And what are some of the really interesting tweaks to that? And so I wanted to give that question to you all. Like, what is it that you all do in the holidays, especially some of the things that you have to take extra time to explain to your white friends?
Well, I have a long list, so maybe, Halili, you want to go first, because it's going to be a while.
You have a long list. I have a white husband. Imagine having to explain things to him. Especially when he's like, that's not Christmas food. I'm like, yes, it is. Yes, that is Christmas food.
Yes, I colonizer, mean, it is Christmas food.
Exactly. It's like, oh yeah, when I think of Christmas, I think of egg rolls and rice and papaya salad. He's like, I think of ham and turkey. And I'm like, ugh. That's so weird.
So Klee, this is really interesting, because I try to decenter those traditional Christmas foods in my multi-generational African-American household. And I almost, folks was ready to fight. Folks was ready to, and I'm like, yo, hold on, wait a minute. Cause you know, in terms of foods, like, so we are a Christian household, a Black Christian household. And so we have this really interesting mix of, thanks to Dr. Milana Karenga in the 60s, who developed Kwanzaa. The idea of Kwanzaa, we have kind of this Kwanzaa Christmas overlap thing that happens. And so the foods are both reminiscent of like down home soul, because we don't have the mac and cheese and the greens and the and what you would consider traditional African-American foods, overlapped with turkey, because apparently folks got made fun of at one point for not having turkey and ham on Christmas. So there's this really interesting mashup, and nobody ever eats the turkey. The ham goes quick, and mostly because people want to use the ham bone for all the soups and stuff afterwards. So there's this really interesting clash that happens where you know, our cultural identity, especially for our West African family as part of the group mix, like we have some foods in there that folks don't, you know, that our traditionalists in the family are like, no. Hell no.
You know, I didn't even know until this year that like ham and turkey was a thing for Christmas. Mm.
There you go.
You just wait. So all the previous years that you've gotten to this season with your hubby, there's...
Well, because the thing is...
It's just
like,
happened?
Yeah. Well, my husband's parents.
I like my husband's.
Yeah, you have to keep that one.
His parents passed before we were dating, and his family mostly live up in the Duluth area, so we really didn't celebrate with them. So most holidays we always spent with my family, and so I was really used to everything, and I feel bad because now as you guys and I are talking, but I never really checked in with him on how weird it must have been with him to go to like, oh yeah, we celebrate Christmas too. Come to my mom's house, you know, and then all the food is not what he expected. And, you know, the presents are different and the way we celebrate is different. And, you know, I mean, he's brought a little bit of something westernized to our Christmases. He plays Santa, you know.
And that makes sense because he got that beard.
He's got the beard. He's got the belly. He's, you know, he's does none of the children are his, so they can look at his eyes and not realize that it's their daddy. So that
he's works. Of the white persuasion.
He's of their white persuasion, so they're a little, you know, fits in a little more with what they're used to. I honestly don't even know if my parents really understand what Christmas is about because we didn't celebrate it growing up. We learned about it through school. I was going
to ask you that. Yeah. Yeah.
And so one year, as a child, I have the older kids of our family of five girls. And then my parents took a break for a few years and then had a boy and then a girl and another boy. But the older of us, we always shared a room. And so one year we decided we were going to pool what money we had and buy my parents slippers for Christmas. Because, you know, that's what you do is slippers. And that's what we saw on TV and learned about at school. So we did that. And so then it was like the night before Christmas. And my dad realized that we had went out and bought them gifts. So he went out to the Walgreens or the Kmart near our house. And he bought us each a box of candy cane. We didn't have a tree or anything, because who knows what that is, he hid it under our bed. And we all shared beds. We had like two full-size beds, and we'd share them. And so in the morning, under each of our beds was a box of a dozen candy canes. And then we just kind of picked it up along the way, little tidbits about, you know, what Americans do. And I was really thinking of this yesterday as I was walking my dog, because there's a Karen family that just moved into the neighborhood, and they put Christmas lights up. And I thought, how nice is that, you know, that they're trying to really fit in and see that, you know, this is something Americans do. And it really reminded me of my parents' experience and our experience growing up and how people, Americans, white Americans, always think that immigrants come in and try to force our language and our religion on them. But really, we just want to fit in. And, you know, we celebrate this religious ceremony that because the Americans do it and we feel like it's an American thing. So no, we don't, like my husband's family, sing happy birthday to Jesus. But we do celebrate the coming together of family, exchanging gifts, you know, teaching the kids naughty or nice, having a meal, which I think is supposed to be right at the core of Christmas.
Well, it's funny because Klee, if you would describe Christmas that way, the elders in my family would have huge issues because they would say your description of it takes it completely away from there's not enough Jesus in your response, Klee. You would cause some arguments in my household. And I think that this is a very interesting piece for us because, yeah, we had the trappings of the kind of the Americana Christmas thing that's really fairly new, right? It's a very pretty modern concept in the way that we do it. This kind of Norman Rockwell, you know, Americana Christmas thing is something that is in my family's zeitgeist. But if any of it takes away from the Christian aspect of Christmas, ooh, you best believe, I will never forget somebody asking, I can't remember if it was my grandma or my aunt, one of them, if I was going to go see Santa, and the response was, oh, no. The only person we going to stand in the line in front of a throne and go bow down to whoever's sitting on that throne is if it's King Jesus. I ain't taking my son to nobody, you know. So we had this very interesting space where, you know, we could do gifts, we could do, you know, but there was a line and you didn't always know where it was. But if the line got too commercial and not Jesus enough, it was going to be a problem, you know, you know. And so let alone, you know, the fact that all of this was in preparation for something that we'll talk about a little later. But watch night. Right. This is the season that opens up our getting ready.
Oh, yeah.
Watch night. And so, you know, so far less about the day, even though the presence and stuff are there. Again, Clea, this is the thing I find interesting is how much we as multi-generational African-Americans with many generations in America still felt like growing up that we were doing Christmas activities to fit in. I just think that's a very interesting, it's interesting to share that feeling with somebody who with an immigrant experience and having to navigate the things there. I had never thought about the connection between those two.
And I want to draw just one more connection between what the two of you are saying, which fitting in is another way of saying belonging, right? So when we think about race equity and we think about diversity, equity, and inclusion, it really is fundamentally about belonging. And so I want to be able to draw that connection for folks so they understand when we work towards race equity, we're talking about a lot of things, and we're talking about inclusion, we're talking about belonging and having that innate feeling as human beings to be a part of something bigger than ourselves, right?
You're listening to Counter Stories. I'm Anthony Galloway with co-hosts Luz Maria Frias and Hlee Lee. This show is created and supported by AMPERS with support from the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund. For our full conversation, please visit counterstories.com.
My parents are from Mexico. So 3/4 of Mexicans identify as Catholic. Mm-hmm. And I myself consider myself as recovering Catholic. I'm not going to go into all the details why, but there's a lot of inconsistencies. And so I'll be speaking both in terms of Mexico, but also Central America and South America. So we start early. So December 7th, Dia de los las Velitas, which is Day of the Candles,
right,
is a day that is celebrated in Colombia, where there are thousands of little candles that are displayed around the country, and it's just absolutely beautiful. Then I'm going to take you to December 16th through December 24th, mm-hmm, which is in Mexico, it's called Las Posadas, which is basically, in English, posadas means inns. So it's basically the inn. So it's a reenactment, if you will, of Mary and Jesus going house to house, mm-hmm, trying to have to find a place then for Mary to give birth to Jesus and being turned away. So for 9 days from December 16th through the 24th, friends and families invite each other to a posada. And so you walk through the towns in Mexico and they're singing. And then for some families, they reenact the denial, right? Is, you know, so they send you packing basically. No, you know, not today. You're not coming in. And so you keep going. Other families don't, you know, they have a prearranged. Yeah. We're going to go to, you know, Tia Maria's house and we're going to go hang there. But once you get there, it's basically a giant Christmas party. There's a piñata, is there for the kids. And then also just having this Christmas ponche. And of course, we can't do posadas or celebrations during this time without tamales, right? So we have to have tamales as part of it. So that is from the 16th through 24th of December. La Nochebuena, which in English means literally the good night. And that is Christmas Eve on the 24th. That's also, Nochebuena refers to poinsettias. And that's the name of a poinsettia in Spanish, which most people, when I tell them this, don't realize that poinsettias are native to Mexico. They originated in Mexico.
Wow.
And it wasn't until the colonizer brought the poinsettias to the U.S. But that's our plant as Mexicans, right? So you have Nochebuena, which is celebrated with La Misa del Gallo, which is a mass of the roosters. So at midnight then on Christmas Eve, you have this massive mass that people go to, right? And after that, then there's a big party as a result of that. December 31st, which is Noche Vieja, which means the old night, the celebration of the new year. So at the stroke of midnight, what happens is you have a plate of grapes and you should then eat a grape with each time the chime strikes the new hour, right? So each grape represents each bell, which is 1 month of the year. And the belief is that you welcome the new year by eating these 12 grapes to represent one grape for each of the new year's month. And according to the tradition, then eating the 12 grapes leads to a year of good luck and prosperity. So for all of our listeners, go get your grapes ahead of time so that New Year's Eve, you have them lined up. And we all know we can use some, you know, good luck and prosperity in 2022 coming off of this global pandemic. And then the last one that I would share with you is January 6th.
Yes.
And January 6th is Dia de los Reyes Magos, yes, which is King's Day. And for that, we there's a big pastry that is in a round form, almost like a wreath. A Rosca de los Reyes is what it's called. And that's really unique to Mexico, but other countries have also adopted it in Latin America. And there's a plastic baby Jesus that's baked into it. And so that ends up being like a big deal if you're the one that finds the baby Jesus in your Rosca de Reyes. And historically, families would, you know, bake their own, but it has certainly come a long way where you see them everywhere. You see them now in some of these U.S.-based franchises. One of my friends sent me a text, actually at the beginning of December, kind of confused in California, like, what's up? This is the beginning of December. They're selling Rosca de Reyes, and it's not for another month, you know.
Right.
But she was appreciative. She's like, okay, they're getting it, you know. They're trying to meet us in terms of our culture, and so it's a lot, you know. There's a lot of celebration. It's really a lot of fun. And in terms of commercialization, certainly things have become more commercialized, as you have both have noted and alluded to, but by and by, for us, you know, as when we were growing up, we didn't come with a whole lot. We seldom had a Christmas tree. If we had one, it was artificial, and it was not something that really was a big focus for us. And it was really modest. I mean, quite honestly, it was really modest in terms of gifts because of our financial constraints. And then us as parents with our girls who are now fully grown adults, probably for the last, I don't know, 5-8 years almost, we decided we're not giving gifts per se to, you know, each other. It's more deciding who to support, you know, financially in terms of gift giving to organizations, because that's really what the need is. And community is looking at the gift of giving, you know, and not doing that inwardly, but more so outwardly with organizations that we would support then financially through gift giving. So
Luz, it's very interesting because my step family is, I say step family just for the sake of, we don't make those distinctions in my family, but so folks understand the connection outside of that, but they're from Ponce and Fajardo in Puerto Rico. And one of the interesting things that I see is the difference, right? So what did you call, because I remember pasteas where we would go house to house and every house had food and it was a marathon of gluttony, taking little bits of food at each house and watching my titi Minga get snickered. Like
that's my dream.
Just tore. The adults would get tore up. And it's one of my learnings about the difference between the brand of Pentecostalism and Catholicism that were clashing during that time. So I got to see that with a little twist. And then in the Dia de los Reyes, the shoes outside. And so I'll never forget when my grandparents were visiting from Puerto Rico, and all of a sudden we had shoes. Our shoes were outside and it's cold. Mm-hmm, and we were like, now my feet are going to be cold. We're gonna go somewhere. Yeah, we are a one pair of shoe per person family. And so So it was interesting to see the clashes, but then also some of the different flavors instead of the baby. And I'll never also forget. So it was a cake. It wasn't the bread, but it was the cake with the baby Jesus in it. And it was supposed to be good luck if you got the right slice. You're listening to Counter Stories. I'm Anthony Galloway with co-hosts Luz Maria Frias and Hui Lee. This show is created and supported by Ampers with support from the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund. For our full conversation, please visit counterstories.com. So, Luz, your tradition took you all the way through New Year's. Were there things, because this, when I say holiday season, usually we're talking about Thanksgiving-ish time frame all the way through the new year. So are there other moments where you're like, we do things just a little bit different than dominant culture?
Yeah, I mean, our New Year's are a big deal. That's really what everyone looks forward to. And traditionally, that's, you know, the end of harvest season. And everybody comes together to thank the ancestors for helping see us through, take a 3-day break from working, which is hard here in America. And it used to be stuff like now my dad will say, don't use money for 3 days or tomorrow morning, you know, after we have our every household has a celebration every time after we have our household ones the next day. First thing you do when you get up, take a shower, put on fresh, clean or new clothes. Don't spend any money for 3 days unless, you know, it's necessary. You know, in the old country, there was a pole and some string made out of hay and a rooster killed and the families would walk under the pole 3 times and then back the other way 3 times as a means of blessing them for the past year and for the year forward. Mm. We have lucky eggs, we call them our lucky eggs, and they're to bring you goodness and wealth and health in the next year. And so every new year, my mom hard boils a ton of eggs and we make the kids all eat an egg. You know, that's the only day that they really need to eat their lucky egg. And you know, all the kids, I always complain, oh, I don't like the yolk and the hard-boiled eggs. And I always say, I said, just once a year, you got to suck it up for once a year, you suck it up. It's your lucky egg, you know. And so last year with COVID, it was like we couldn't all be together. And so, you know, one person stopped by and picked up the lucky egg. It's like, you got to have your lucky egg for the new year. Yeah, and so it is a big deal. We dress up in our best clothes, our Hmong clothes that we've spent all year making, you know, traditionally. Anyway, we used to do that when we were kids. Mom would make us sew all year to put on outfits that we would wear for one weekend. Typically, it's really the only courting time because you're working on your farms all year. Then you get these, you know, 3 days to 7 days off and you're having these big festivals. So my first time that I went to Thailand was right around New Year time. It was because I wanted to see how they celebrated it. And I met up with this guy named Thong through Dr. Koo, who unfortunately passed away from COVID. His last name was Lee and my last name is Lee. So he was like, you're my sister. So come stay at my house with my parents. And they treated me as a sister. And I went with him from village to village as he courted women.
Wow.
And like, I watched him like court women.
So you weren't like a third wheel, like obviously women wouldn't be interested in him because you're right by him or did you have to keep a distance?
He'd say, this is my cousin from America. And I was, you know, I'm chubby. And so everybody knew I was from America. You know, they'd be like, oh, we heard there was American in the village. Must be you. And I'm like, oh, that's us. Yeah, that's me. So, you know, it was just like immediately they knew I was the cousin from America. And I was just like, I would question him. I'd be like, you seemed really into that girl. And now we're in this other village and you seemed really into that girl, you know? And it was like, so I was able to see it firsthand. But that's where the ball tossing game comes in. That was the game where you try to get to know a person of the opposite sex through the ball tossing game.
I'm going to leave the jokes alone on that one. But So what I love about the different traditions is we tend to get boxed into this myopic view of how these celebrations, you know, should go, but also the histories that go along with it, right? So a lot of the stories, this becomes high story season. And I know I was talking with Don about this the other day, because wintertime, you know, with snow on the ground, tends to open up, particularly for many indigenous communities, the ability to bring out the most sacred stories, because snow has to be on the ground to tell some of those. And we were reminiscing on the fact that there's a shared experience there, in that a lot of the most sacred stories about survival, and think about this, right? All the rest of the year, folks are working through things, but this tends to be a season where folks generally take more break than most of the year. And my family always worked. Like, there was never, we had the kind of jobs that you didn't get a whole lot of vacation for. You had to just go and work. So this is the one time a year where there actually is some built-in time for folks to not have to work. And this is when I would get the stories, the tragic ones, that people wouldn't tell elsewhere, because the season has such a focus on hope and joy and peace and love and all those types of things. It seemed to create a condition where folks were more willing to tell some of the harder stories during this time than any other time throughout the year. And so this is where I would hear huge doses of Black history, not February, contrary to what a lot of society likes to reserve this for, right? It's during this time that I would get stories of folks who were lynched and folks who survived, and crazy stories about powerful women taking stuff, you know, taking odds in their own hand and making sure that nobody ever puts their hand on them again. Like, this, these are the times that I would get these amazing stories, because they, one, the adults would get a little tipsy and forget the kids are still around listening. And so this holiday season becomes this very different thing. The coming together of the wisdom, and it never fails every year. In all the ways, things that we've talked about, somebody somewhere hits that piece of wisdom that makes you go, yes, this is what ties all of this time together. Thank you all so much for sharing your traditions with us. We're so glad that we were able to get together. Sorry we missed you, Don. We couldn't be here with us. Thank you for sharing your traditions with us. No matter what your tradition is, no matter what your experience, no matter what you celebrate, may you always be able to, in whatever season, whatever opportunity there is to take a break, find that dose of wisdom that reminds you that your days are getting brighter. This has been Counter Stories. I'm Anthony Galloway, pastor of St. Mark AME Church and senior partner of the Dendros Group.
Luz Maria Frias, Deputy Attorney General with the State of Minnesota. Any comments and insights I've shared are strictly my own and should not be attributed to my employer.
And I'm Halili, owner of the Other Media Group and Counter Stories producer.
This has been Counter Stories, a co-production of the Counter Stories crew, the Other Media Group, and Ampers, diverse radio for Minnesota's communities, with support from the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund. For our full conversation, please visit counterstories.com.